This past Shabbos, we read Parshas Tazria and Metzora, as I imagine you heard, 157 psukim. Many of them seem very, very foreign to us. Very, very foreign to us. Pasuk after pasuk, you go through the Parsha, it's very hard to figure out, in terms of the pratim of the Parsha, where we fit into it. But in terms of one simple klal that we can think about, in terms of Tazria and Metzora, it's maybe the most relevant thing that affects our world today. It might be the reason that our yeshiva is located here and not Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh with the Beis HaMikdash. Chazal tell us that there are many reasons why a person gets saras. According to the Gemara, I believe the Gemara says 7 reasons. According to the Medrash, I think the Medrash has 11 reasons. But primary, both in terms of what was and in terms of what's in our mind, to the point that we sometimes think this is the only thing you get saras for, is the chet of Lashon Hara. The chet of Lashon Hara. I had a conversation with a couple of the Bachrim here this past Friday. Had a very meaningful conversation. And with their permission, I want to review some of the things that we discussed then. I don't like to repeat. Usually try to share something that no one in the room has heard from me, at least. But I feel that it was such an important conversation and such an important way to think about Lashon Hara that I want to share it with you. The first thing I want to just point out is that our picture of the Chafetz Chaim might be totally off. Our picture of the Chafetz Chaim is probably a very silent, very serious, very somber person. A person who didn't talk much. That's probably the image most of us have when we think of the Chafetz Chaim. Because when we think of the Chafetz Chaim, we think of a person who was the most perfected in history, maybe, certainly in his time, when it came to the Koach HaDibur. I have a sefer at home from some of the writings of the son of the Chafetz Chaim, Sichos Chafetz Chaim, there's a section called Michaye Abba, from the life of my father. And he writes there, the son of the Chafetz Chaim testifies about his father. I'm giving you a slightly loose translation. My father was the greatest of the generation, it's written in Hebrew. Translated. My father was the greatest of the generation when it came to Shmiras HaLashon. That's not such a chiddush to us. That part doesn't shock us. But then he writes, people assume that my father was a very quiet person. And I'm here to tell you that he was not. That my father, the Chafetz Chaim, the Heilige Rav Yisrael Meir HaKohen from Radin, spoke a lot. He was opinionated. He had a lot to say. And that was the godless of the Chafetz Chaim. Not that the Chafetz Chaim never spoke, but that the Chafetz Chaim had so perfected his Koach HaDibur, he wanted to teach people to not speak Lashon Hara doesn't mean they have to be a mute. Doesn't mean that you can't have any social interaction. Doesn't mean that you can't have opinions on things. There's a way to talk and a way to not talk. It's interesting. Parsha Shmini, a couple weeks ago, Vayidom Aaron, right? We learned from Aaron that there's a time and place to be completely silent in the face of a tragedy, I don't know what to say, so good, so don't say. Who asked you to say? Vayidom Aaron, be quiet. In Shmini, we learn what a person is allowed or not allowed to put into his mouth, in terms of what's kosher, what may be eaten, what may not be eaten. Tazria Metzora is not about silence, and it's about what comes out of one's mouth. How do I learn to talk in a way that Hashem wants me to talk? You know that when the Chafetz Chaim went to get a haskama for his sefer, when he first went to get a haskama for the sefer Chafetz Chaim, he came to a Talmud Chacham, a tzaddik of that time, a great Jew named Rav Baruch Mordechai of Nevardik, and he wrote him a haskama, a picture of the Chafetz Chaim as, you know, the elder of the Chafetz Chaim, is a younger person at the time. So he went to a gadol b'torah in his time, Rav Baruch Mordechai of Nevardik, and he said to him, I need a haskama for my sefer. And he looks at this book, looks at the Chafetz Chaim, the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, divided into two primary halachic sections, Hilchos Lashon Hara and Hilchos Isurei Rechilos. And he's thinking to himself, this scholar is thinking to himself, this Rav is thinking to himself, why did this young man write this strange book? It's a lot of work. There wasn't a Shulchan Aruch to build off of. The Chafetz Chaim picked and selected and called different Ma'amari Chazal from different places and Rishonim and early Achronim to try to somehow put together Mamish Ashulchan Aruch of Yisurei Lashon Hara and Yisurei Rechilos. And he did it. So Rav Baruch Mordechai of Nevardik said, I looked at this sefer and I said, what a strange work. Did this young man relatively young man, write this book because he's just trying to be creative? Is he just looking for a project to win some honor? He picked a topic that no one's written about, knowing that he'll have a unique work. Was it just an intellectual pursuit, a scholarly work? Or did he write it because he practices what he preaches? That this is who he is, and he's trying to mechazik Klal Yisrael in a very serious aveira. The Chafetz Chaim writes in his Hakdama to the Sefer Chafetz Chaim that there are, every time you open your mouth, there are potentially, listen to this, 17 los asay and 14 mitzvahs asay that you're potentially in violation of. Now, obviously, it's pretty hard to nail all 31 in one juicy conversation, although it's possible. But everything you speak is not just, you know, the primary prohibition of speaking Lashon Hara, which we find in our parsha this week. Right? But there's 17 potential forms of Averos that, of the 613, 17 Los Asay and 14 Mitzvos Asay, in addition to several curses in the Torah for a person who speaks badly or behind someone's back, that you're in violation of. So the Shavarach Mordechai of Navardik said, I have to see what this young man is about. And he asked the Chavetz Chaim to spend the afternoon. Again, I know this story because the Chavetz Chaim's son writes it in that section, Mechai Abba, where he recounts things that he heard from his father. And throughout the course of the day, Rav Baruch Mordechai of Navardik tried to lure the Chavetz Chaim into some Lashon Hara. He tried to get him off topic. They were having many conversations. He said, over the course of the day, we had many, many conversations. And he said, not once, in the course of all of our conversations, not once, did the Chavetz Chaim say anything negative. We spoke about a lot of things. It wasn't a silent afternoon. But not once did the Chavetz Chaim descend into lowly conversation, into Lashon Hara. And he said, when I saw that the Sefer that he had presented to me was nothing other than who he was, as we know the Chavetz Chaim, we call him by the name of his book, the Chavetz Chaim, that I was ready to give the Haskamah. So, Chavetz, when we talk about being Nizhar and Lashon Hara, it doesn't mean committing yourself to never speak. That's not what Hashem is asking for us. What Hashem is asking for us, from us, is that we should learn how to speak in the right way. How to talk in the right way. How to know what I'm allowed to say and what I'm not allowed to say. And to take that responsibility very seriously. The Sefer is divided really into a third section, the way the Chavetz Chaim viewed it. The first two sections are halacha. The third section is what he called Shmiras HaLashon. We sometimes view it as a separate Sefer. Shmiras HaLashon is the Musar and the Hashkafa that goes along with those halachas. And the Chavetz Chaim said you need to learn both. He quoted a Medrash in Mishlei. The Pasuk says, L'das Chachma u'Musar. You need to know Chachma and Musar. You need to know the halacha, and I need to know how serious it is. If I just know it's very serious, but I don't know what's what, then I could be very inspired not to speak badly, but I don't know what's considered bad speech, improper speech. And if I just know the halachos, but I don't understand the depth and the severity, the seriousness of it, that's also going to leave me a little bit shorthanded. So I need to know the laws, and I need to be inspired to keep those laws. That's point number one I want to make. That when it comes to Shmiras HaLashon, again, you have to learn it seriously. You have to think about it seriously. You have to know what you're allowed to say, what you're not allowed to say, to be inspired, to make the right choices, but to remind ourselves that, again, it's not for a person who's looking to adopt a path of being mute for the rest of your life. To put your mouth on pause and you know, only talk in the context of reading a line of Gemara or davening out of your sitter. It's not what Hashem wants from us. That's point number one. But I want to share with you, after that Hakdama, I want to share with you something from an interesting book that I read about a year ago, maybe a little more than a year ago. We'll dive in Marv in a couple of minutes. I want to read to you an introduction to a book written by a fellow from Rwanda. Now, before any of you were born, about 25 years ago in Rwanda in 1994, there was a terrible, terrible civil war that was taking place. An ethnic civil war between the Hutus and the Tutsis. And in a short period of about 100 days, close to 1 million people were killed. Try to wrap your head around that number. In 100 days, upwards of 800,000 people were killed, brutally killed, by people who, a couple days before this started, were their friendly neighbors. There's a fellow whose name is Paul Rusesabagina. Here's a picture of him. A Rwandan man, as you can see. And this is his autobiography, called An Ordinary Man. And when I read this book, I said, there is no better way for us in Tavshin Ayin Ches, to really get a sense of how much damage a person can do with their tongue. I want to just read to you a little bit from his Hakdama, from his introduction. He was a hero. You'll see why very quickly. My name is Paul Rusesabagina. I am a hotel manager. In April 1994, when a wave of mass murder broke out of my country, I was able to hide 1,268 people inside the hotel where I worked. And he goes on and describes how the army came, and he was hiding. He was hiding people who they wanted to kill. And he convinced them to not. I was not particularly eloquent in these conversations. For 76 days, he negotiated the lives of 1,268 people who eventually he saved. They were no different from the words I would have used in saner times to order a shipment of pillowcases, for example. What did I have to work with? I had a 5-story building. I had a cooler full of drinks. I had a small stack of cash in the safe. I had a working telephone, and I had my tongue. I had my kolach hadibur. I had the ability to decide what I want to say and what I shouldn't say. And he goes on, he describes very painfully the first day he stepped outside of his home, and he saw a fellow from his neighborhood, a young man, who he says, I don't know how to describe him other than to use an American word, cool, a cool young guy, a young married man, who was well-liked in the neighborhood, who was popular with the little children, a sweet, kind, gentle person. One day, he said, I walked out that first day of the killings, and he was wearing a military uniform, holding a machete in his hand, dripping with blood. They were chopping people to pieces, literally, their own neighbors, chopping them to pieces, for no other reason other than the fact that they were from a slightly different ethnic group. And he says, what had caused this to happen? How does this happen? How do you pick up a sword and chop down men, women, and children overnight? What changed? What could have possibly happened? What had caused this to happen? Very simply, words. He describes how the Hutu majority government got on the radio waves. There was years of tension that led up to all of this. And essentially, they took over the radio and said, it's time for you to do what a good person should do, what a proper citizen should do. Go out and chop down these others. For what? Why? Your neighbors, your friends, a day ago. All of these come down to a failure of words. And this is what I want to tell you. Chaim, maybe you never heard of Musar Shmuz from Paul Rusesabagina before, but you're going to remember this. Words are the most effective weapons of death in man's arsenal. Words are the most effective weapon of death in man's arsenal. But they can also be powerful tools of life. They may be the only ones. Today, I am convinced that the only thing that saved those 1,268 people in my hotel was words. Not the liquor, not the money, not the UN. Just ordinary words directed against the darkness. And he concludes his akdama by writing the following. My words were my connection to a saner world, to life as it ought to be lived. I am not a politician, I am not a poet. I built my career on words that are plain and ordinary and concerned with everyday details. I am nothing more or less than a hotel manager, trained to negotiate contracts and charged to give shelter to those who need it. My job did not change in the genocide, even though I was thrust into a sea of fire. I only spoke the words that seemed normal and sane to me. I did what I believed to be the ordinary thing that an ordinary man would and should do. I said no to outrageous actions the way I thought anybody would, and it still mystifies me to this day that so many others could say yes. Ad kan, the words of Paul Rusesabagina in his Akdama to his autobiography, An Ordinary Man. Chevra, after I read these words, I really believed in the most literal sense what Shlomo HaMelech said in the 18th parak of Mishlei. Shlomo HaMelech writes in the 18th parak of Mishlei, Maves v'chayim biyad lashon. Life and death are in the power of the tongue. So when the Gemara says that a person who speaks Lashon Hara kills 3 people, the one who speaks it, the one it's spoken about, the one who listens to it, it's not a joke. You're standing in the lunchroom. You're on the basketball court. You're in between classes. You decide to make a witty comment about a teacher who you're not getting along with mostly because you didn't study enough for the test, you didn't do as well as you would have liked. You decide to be clever, or to be smart, or to be funny, or to say something to try to win some favor with your friends, if only for a moment. You're a murderer. And if you think it's exaggerated, listen to this story. Listen to how people were killed. He says, I was there, I saw it with my own eyes. It was evil words that led to the death of people. It's the most dangerous weapon that we have, and it's the most powerful tool that we have. Let's think about it just for half a second in the positive sense. The Sfarim say, why do we bring, as part of the kapara for the Mitzvah, why are there two birds? One that's shechted and one that flies away. And the Sfarim explain, because, yes, there are words that need to be laid to rest. There are things that have to be killed that can't be spoken. But there's also the bird that flies around chirping. There's a person who uses the Kol HaChadiva to say something nice, to be mechazik another person, to give life to another human being. Mi boi chai, the famous Medrash. Who wants life? Mi ha'isha chafetz chayim. Learn how to speak the right way. Learn how to say the nice thing and the proper thing and the right thing. Again, realize the power that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us with the power of speech. That's my very simple lesson to you, coming on the heels of Parshas Tazria Metzora. Hashem doesn't ask us to be quiet. The Chafetz Chaim wasn't quiet. And I leave you with one final insight from the Chafetz Chaim, a diuk that the Chafetz Chaim makes in the Igeres HaGra. The Vilna Gaon in his famous letter says that for every moment, he quotes a Medrash, for every moment that a person guards his tongue, for every moment, listen carefully, for every rega that a person guards his tongue, he's zocha to a schar that no malach or bria could even begin to understand. So the Chafetz Chaim says, it doesn't say you have to be careful for a year. It doesn't say you have to be careful for a month. It doesn't say you have to be careful for a full day or even an hour. For every second that you have the opportunity to say something that the Borei Olam doesn't want you to say, and you catch yourself and you say, you know what, I'm not going to be that type of guy. I know sometimes people say things, but it's just wrong. It's nasty. It's wrong. It's murderous. And I'm not going to do it. The Chafetz Chaim is medayik, and he says, in that rega, in that moment, that 1 second that you held back, you're zoche to a schar that no malach can even begin to understand. So Chaver, Sfiras HaOmer is a day where we try to work on ourselves just step by step. You don't have to decide, I heard Tazria Metzora this past Shabbos, now I'm the Chafetz Chaim. It doesn't work like that. But what you can decide to do is to say, next time I'm going to say something about someone in my class, or someone in my shul, or someone in my neighborhood, or even Chas v'Shalom, a Rebbe or a teacher, or someone around me who maybe is a little bit different than me, just catch yourself for a rega. Catch yourself for a second. And if you catch yourself for that second, the Chafetz Chaim, if the Chafetz Chaim is your guarantor, there'll be zocha to a schar in the Olam HaEmes that no malach, that no creature in this world can even begin to understand.
Guys, 804. Great job. See you.